Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Playful Humans podcast. I'm your host, Mike Montague, and my guest this week is Leanne Linsky. She is a founder and CEO of Plausible. You can go to plausible.com. This is a live comedy website. Super cool. We're going to talk to her about how she made comedy events happen in the pandemic and now does those remotely as well. If you would like to learn more about how to rediscover the power of play as an adult, go to playfulhumans.com. We got a cool personality quiz and all kinds of good stuff there as well. We're going to talk about how Leanne plays for a living next on the Playful Humans podcast. Here we go. Welcome to the show. We like to start the Playful Humans podcast with a joke of the week. The joke of the week this week is brought to you by Airplane Mode. I was in airplane mode and I asked Siri if it was going to rain today. She said, yes. I said, surely it's not. And she said, don't call me Shirley. It was airplane mode. Okay. Now, the official joke of the week is I made a pencil with two erasers and it was pointless. Do you have a joke for us?
Yeah, I actually went out with people in real life the other day and I have to say it was really awkward. I kept forgetting to unmute myself.
I feel like a lot of people have had that going the last couple of years, and now we're all in so many Zoom meetings that it happens all the time, and I'm always still embarrassed when I forget to unmute myself in virtual meetings because I've only done about a few thousand of them now, which brings us to what you do at Plausible. It was a very relatable joke. Thanks for the setup, because you do online events that are live, and I think that's such a cool thing, and it's hard to pull off. So how did you get into this in the first place?
Yeah, well, I actually have been doing comedy for over 20 years. Hard to believe since I'm so young.
You started at two?
Yeah, I wish. And what happened was when I moved from the East Coast to the West Coast, I found myself spending more time in traffic than I did on any stage. So I was like, how do I fix this problem? How do I solve this? So this is actually before COVID. So in 2019 BC, as I refer to it, before COVID, I started doing online mics using existing technology such as Zoom, and they were going really well. And comedians are like, oh, why don't we do more of these? It saves me a lot of time. I know that when I work out my jokes here, they're going to work in real life. And then of course, COVID happened and everybody started doing everything on Zoom and Google Meets and whatnot. And so, but I was like, okay, that's great. But then I realized it creates other issues because as great as those technologies are, they didn't solve a lot of the problems that we as entertainers have. So I actually created Plausible. It's not Zoom. It's our own technology that we built specifically designed for live comedy. So we changed different, you know, noticeable things like audio. There's no delay. Which is super important when you're trying to get laughs. Now I tell my comedians online, if you don't hear anyone laughing, it's because you're not funny. it's not a delay. It's not a delay. So we created some things like that. And then also an opportunity for comedians to not only do more comedy in between real life gigs, but also ways to monetize that they don't have opportunity to do in so many other ways. So we kind of flipped the business model on its head and created Plausible.
I love that. And I have so many questions. The first one is really about the applause, because I think that's a huge part, especially for people that are used to live performing. So for me, I started in radio and I started DJing in bars and clubs first, which was great. You can see the energy, you can read the room, you know exactly who's, you know, there and what age group they are and what, you know, like songs they're most likely to, you know, respond to and stuff. And then I got on radio And it was not what I expected. Like, you tell the funniest joke you've ever thought of and nobody laughs. They're all in their cars and offices and stuff. And so maybe one phone line in the corner would blink and I'd be like, somebody called in, hey, that was a good one. And I'll be like, okay, thanks. But, you know, it's not the same 2 minutes later. I think that's a huge deal. I appreciate it now because I feel like I'm a better performer virtually and I can do things like this where I have learned to bring energy, whether there's an audience, you know, actively in front of me or not. But I got to imagine for comedians and performers, that's a huge deal to have a live audience that they can hear laugh, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And your experience as on the radio is exactly what it's like for a comedian to do things online, whether it's via streaming YouTube or even other social media platforms where we can stream it. But then we have to stop and read a chat or a message. It's really hard to do. Right. It takes you out of the moment. And I mean, it's great in so many aspects, but it's not the same as in person, you know? And I am a firm believer. I don't think we can really recreate an in-person event. There's an energy, there's a vibe, there's a magic to being in person around other humans that I don't think really should be replicated. However, I think there's a gap in between what we currently have and what we would ultimately like. And I think that gap is where Plausible is filling the need, because you can on Plausible have an audience that you can hear in real time. In fact, it doesn't have the one-way audio where it cuts out the other person. So if someone coughs or guffaws or something like that, it doesn't interrupt the comedian's flow. But we can hear the sound like we would in the real room. And the audience can see and hear other people laughing in real time. And people are more likely to laugh if they hear other people laughing, hence the laugh.
Right. That's huge. Right?
In sitcoms, it's very huge. And the comedians, you know, as a comedian, I don't need a huge audience to be able to read a room. I just need to see a few faces. And we created our screen so that we can see the audience, but we don't have to click through another screen to see all of the audience. We can just virtually, we can scroll with our mouse and they just carousel through. So it's kind of like if I'm standing on stage, you know, you can only see so many people because of the spotlights. So you can usually only see a few people in the front row. So we see those front row people and then we kind of pan, which I equate to a scroll of the wheel, because I don't have to stop my focus and look for a thing to click on. I can just run it and I can read the room very rapidly, you know.
Fun. Now, before we get to the business part of things, which I think is also interesting, I wanted to ask you about the types of events that this are good for, because I'm feeling this, and I think a lot of people are post-pandemic, that some stuff is better virtually, some stuff is better live, and there's some where we could just make it better if we had a different tool, technology, setup, and stuff. What do you think is the best group? Is it people who want to do a live performance, but they have a distributed audience, like maybe, you know, a national podcast audience or something like that, or company events, they have distributed workforces. They're not going to fly everybody in these days and stuff. Those are a couple that come to mind for me. But what do you feel like the advantages of this sort of live virtual show is?
Yeah, I think the two that you mentioned are absolutely. Two things that I've already seen. So we've done private shows for corporations, international corporations, where they can't otherwise bring those groups of people together. And that was really fun and exciting to do. In fact, one of the first shows we did a couple of days after we launched last year was a corporate show. I was like, oh my goodness, like of all things. But yeah, we do that because now with the growth of remote work, how do you bring people together and what do you do with them? Like what kind of, how many events are there? So that is definitely a thing. There's also, when I was doing all the research behind this, like I learned in the US, 40% of the open mics are in California and New York, and everything else is kind of spread out. So accessibility to people who live in more rural areas, this is really helpful too. It's also, I'm finding different demographics. We have a lot of older users who, you know, have been doing comedy for a long time, 20, 30 or more years. And, you know, even me, like I don't want to sit at a bar all night, all the time, you know, and doing comedy requires a lot of that. But if I'm just working, you know, doing other things, this is a, like an opportunity to do something different, still do what I love, but I don't have to compromise my health or things like that. There's also, since COVID, a lot of people don't go out anymore. They have autoimmune disease, other health issues or concerns that this is a real true help to them and an asset, because they're like, wow, otherwise I wouldn't be doing nearly as much. So I also see that. And on the flip side, on the fan side, I see people who come on and they're like, oh, I can just put my kids to bed. I don't have to get a sitter. I don't have to buy two drinks. I don't have to come out a couple hundred bucks just to, you know, do something different. And yet the other thing I hear fans saying is like, wow, you know, going to a comedy club is intimate in itself, you know, but coming on here is a whole different level. Like they go, they walk away going, I feel like I know these people personally. I feel like I know the entertainer rather than just attended their show. So
Yeah, there is a different vibe and immediacy. Sometimes that is good, and I've seen it kind of be bad in meetings and other things where people, you miss that mingling and the sitting around before the show sometimes, or before the meeting where you would kind of get to know coworkers and stuff. If you can build that time in, I find that really valuable. But the other things you mentioned, the really valuable is the travel, just the sheer amount of time and effort it takes to get to a show. Really kind of doubles or triples your investment of time and time shifting. I'm with you. I knew when I was DJing in those bars and clubs that I didn't want to do that in my 40s. I was like, this is not sustainable. You've never seen a cool 40-year-old DJ in a club.
No.
My joke, Leanne, is that like they figured out a trick though. You just put a helmet on like Marshmello or Daft Punk, right. And then they nobody sees that you got gray hair, but or no hair. But but for me, I was like, this is not. I don't want to do this till 1-2 o'clock in the morning, all the time. And to be honest with you, it was dangerous driving home from those gigs at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. I was always sober, but I can't say that about everybody else on the road at that time. And I would just be exhausted, which is not great either. So there is a lot of other unintended consequences, I think, that happen from that time shifting. But I think the accessibility of different shows for rural events and different comedians that just might not make it to your city, or you might not make it to their show that they happen to be doing, that's a cool thing.
Yeah.
Now
you also, can I add one?
Yeah, add on to it.
You had asked about other types of events, and some of the comedians have podcasts, and they started experimenting with their podcast on Plausible so that they would have their guest on like this, but we would have a live audience, and then they'd have some Q&A at the end. So they have like a little VIP room, but it changes the energy because now their guest is like, oh, I better step it up a bit, or, you know,
it does give a different feel to it. Yeah,
it really does. We even have another comedian who's bringing, partnering with, I believe, a musician. So this is new and they just listed it, but they're going to do like a late night show on Plausible. That's all live and kind of like that interview with comedy, with some music and things like that. So there are people experimenting in ways to bring other formats to the platform.
Awesome. That is super cool. And I wanted to ask you about the business model of that. You just gave some really great examples. You were kind of going where I was going too, which is there is an interesting thing in the world. You kind of mentioned open mic nights, that the way comedians came up in the 80s is not the same as now. And you can build your own audiences on social media and other stuff, but they might be really distributed. It's not like you've, you know, worked that same city and clubs and you've built an audience of fans, or even like a band touring around the Midwest anymore. They might have millions of viewers on TikTok and only a few hundred people or a few dozen people showing up at a show in, you know, Ohio that they're playing, because their audience is so distributed. So I could see where them playing a concert live virtually is significantly different and better to reach their online fans than the way it was, you know, traditionally, the way you would build an audience, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you nailed it. And when talking to comedians and they're saying, I spend a lot of time creating all this content for my social media platforms and posting, I'm like, well, how much of that converts? And they're like, you mean into someone coming to see me? I was like, yeah, they're like, right. Rarely, if never, you know? And I'm like, exactly. Because they don't live near where you're going. There's not a lot of clubs everywhere. So that's just really hard for someone to scale. Like, you know, yeah. So that's, so why wouldn't you?
You have to get really massive to have like big audiences in every city you're gonna go to. I find that even for my little show here, I mean, I can get 10 or 12 people together in Kansas City, but I can get, you know, hundreds or thousands together online, which is great.
Yeah. And the other thing is on social media, like you have to have hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands, whatever the number is, depending on the platform, to begin to monetize it. And then you're only monetizing, you know, cents, to, you know, dollars, like small amounts, really, unless you get like major sponsor, you're a really well-known name. So it takes a lot to get there. And as much as people are like, oh, I'm doing all this stuff and I'm going to do that and I'm going to go viral, it's like, how many things really go viral? Like, there's a small percent. So on Plausible, the business model is what we do is we give all of the tools to the comedian and we're like, here's your scheduling tools, here's your ticketing services, here's your virtual stage. You set the time, you set your price, you do that. And if they want to do a free show, great. If you want to do a paid show, the minimum ticket is $5, right? So per household, basically, if a person's on a device, mm-hmm. then if they have other people watching, it's $5. But they only have to have one person show up in order to start making money. So he makes, you know, we do a split of the door, you know, but the majority of that money goes to the comedian. So, you know, Plausible makes a percent and they make the bigger percent, but one person in, you're already making money. We're not requiring you to audition. We're not requiring you to have a minimum number of followers. We're not requiring you to have IMDb credits, none of that stuff. So with one ticket sold, you're already doing better than you would be on your social media platform of maybe 3,000 followers.
Yeah, I think that is amazing. And it's really cool the way people can build that up. I may be going out of your expertise here with one of my last questions, but mm-hmm. you tell me, I think even for your own career and building it, how do you think the best way to market these events is? I'm kind of in the mindset of you really have to work on everything you're doing and all that content marketing to build an email list. And then work on like those subscribers and then get those subscribers to convert to some sort of paid event like this. But what do you see most people doing or how do you pull off a great online event?
I think the people who are most successful with them, honestly, they are really good about promoting themselves. And by promoting themselves, there's so much out there on social media that you can't post once and expect that everybody saw it. Cause I'm telling you right now, they didn't. And if they did, they didn't read it. I look at it like you have to become the Bed Bath & Beyond coupon. And mm-hmm. we all know what that is. And we've all used it at some point, but we always get them. And what do? We put them in that drawer in our kitchen and save them. Cause we know eventually we're going to pull it out and use it. Be the Bed Bath & Beyond coupon. Get your name out there so people start seeing it over and over and over again. Hmm. So on social media, that's a huge thing. And when people are doing a show and I look at their feed and they've only promoted their show one or two times, I'm sorry, but it's not surprising to me that people didn't show up. The other thing is email list. Email has the highest conversion rate out of any other free marketing tool you're going to get. And because your list already likes you or they wouldn't be on your list, you know, social media, we can follow anybody for any variety of reasons. But an email list, having an email list and sharing good content in your email that people will open and read so that it's very clear to the point with really good directions to convert is the way to go. And what, like, I saw a total change in comedians who were doing shows regularly, like, why is no one coming? I go, have you emailed them? And they're like, oh, they emailed and they had this huge turnout. They're like, who knew? And I was like,
who knew email was the thing? Yeah, it still works. Everybody says email is dead. But when people want to hear from you and they're looking for your email, they're a fan of yours, that's different than just, you can't buy a list of 100,000 people and spam them and expect them to buy.
Yeah.
But when you build up that audience of people that want to hear from you on email, or they've been to a show before, or they love what you do, then they're really in on it. Okay, my last question here is about your career in general in comedy, because I find these stories fascinating. When did you know that you would make it for 20 years as a comedian, or did you never feel certain, or what was it like in the early years? Did you have like a cubicle job and you're doing this at night and side hustles? Mm-hmm. I love all of the above. What was your story?
Yeah, all of that. When did I think I would make it? I thought I would have made it a long time ago. Did I? I don't think so.
You're still doing it. I consider making it making enough money to get to keep doing it for 20 years is making it.
Yeah. And most of that money comes from cubicle jobs and other things, honestly, because little known fact, comedians typically don't get paid unless you start featuring or headlining. And I actually headlined a couple of private shows, but that clubs probably wouldn't put me as a headliner. Honestly, I don't know. Yeah. I haven't really pursued that avenue because I kind of made my own lane. Yeah. And I think, honestly, that's what I did. I kind of made my own lane and it worked for me. But at my journey, when I started out, I didn't know that this is what I was going to do. But I did know I took a comedy writing class because I was doing a lot of public speaking. And I was like, oh, this is really great. And then a coworker was like, you should really study improv. And I was like, what? And then ended up taking a class. I'm like, I'm in. Like, this is it. This is what I want to do. What I do with it, I don't know, but I know that I can go in here and it's like being five. It is literally playing for 3 hours of my evening. I laughed so hard. I had so much fun. You know, it just tapped into this whole other part of me. And I'm like, oh my goodness, why am I not doing this all the time? So that's kind of how I got hooked. And even if I hadn't taken this path and moved to New York with two suitcases 5 years later and all that kind of stuff. Taking an improv class just kind of cracked open everything in life because it gave me permission to have fun, to seriously, you know, that's what I love about the name of your podcast of Playful Humans. I'm like, oh my gosh, are you an improviser? Like we're the, you know, because I love that. There's a need for that. So Yeah.
You just nailed the crux of the show. So I appreciate you putting a cap on that one and nailing it for sure. And I find that in so many different things. So I get to host game shows or we have people in that do really cool creative art. And whether it's cross stitch or magic or sports or stuff, there's so many different ways to play and to find that energy again. It is really important to have that energy. Sometimes I think all try to work so hard on making it that we forget to enjoy the ride along the way. And it doesn't have to be, Jerry Seinfeld level of success to have a really great life. You can make money. You can do it for fun as a hobby and, just, you know, be a comedian to be a comedian. And I'm looking at doing that. I think this year is the year for me to do at least an open mic and an improv comedy class. It's on the
list. Know, I love that. And even for fans, like if you go to Plausible and you sign up as a fan and you attend an open mic, ask for a spot and try it out. Every time I go to an open mic, you know, no matter how busy my day is with work or whatever else, and all I do is work on Plausible. But if I go to an open mic, it's within minutes. I'm in a different headspace. I'm working out a different muscle. All of my stress is gone because we're laughing. We're tapping in and we're using a different part of the brain. And when I'm using that part of the brain, I can't use this part of the brain to be sad or feel bad or stressed or worried. It changes everything. And it also changes my perspective. So even if it's not something that, like you say, that maybe you're not going to pursue as a career, even if you try once or twice, it's kind of like just doing something different and it cracks everything wide open.
So good. Speaking of doing something different, are you ready to play a game?
Yeah, I love games.
All right, here we go. Oh, wait, we need the music. Your survey says we surveyed 100 people. Top answers are on the cards here in front of me. All I need you to do is give me one of the top five answers. We asked 100 people to name a subject people talk about when they're just getting acquainted.
Where are you from?
Location. Ooh, there you go. Hometown, definitely on the list there. We got weather, jobs, kids, family, and hobbies and interests. All right, there you go. Next one. Name a talent you wish you had.
Singing.
Number one answer. You nailed it. We got to give you applause for that because, that's the laughing. applause for the right answer. If we were doing this on plausible.com, we would have had the laughs and the applause. You've already won, but the last one here for you. Name something a woman with a beehive hairdo might hide in her hair.
Pencil.
Yeah, number one answer, easy. Probably a lot of bobby pins, maybe money, a comb or a pick, or drugs on the top list. Done. You win again. That means you get a free 30-second commercial here for plausible.com. There's two Z's in that, first of all, and you can find more information there at the website. But anything you can do to help us or anything we can do to help you, Leanne.
Yeah. You know what? Go to plausible.com, create a free fan account or a free comedian account and attend a free open mic or show. Check out one of the new shows, $5. When do we even have a fundraiser? But whatever you're into, I'm sure we've got you covered. Take your mind off all of that stress and let it go and get a good laugh.
I love it. Again, that's Leanne Linsky. Find her at plausible.com. Links in the show notes. You can find Playful Humans at playfulhumans.com. We have the quiz, playfulhumans.com/quiz. You can find out which playful personality you are and join our list. You get notified about upcoming episodes and events that we have going on. There you go. Thank you, Leanne. And until next time, if you can't be good at it. That's what I always say. Go play, everybody.
For the